When 91-year-old Maria Concha Lopez died in her California home a few years ago, she weighed just 35 pounds. She was also covered with bed sores that were described as being so deep that her bones were exposed. Among the questions raised by this, was it a case of elder abuse? Lopez's 26-year-old niece, Stephanie Hernandez, was charged with abuse and with murder. Hernandez told jurors that she was her great-aunt's sole caregiver because the woman refused to see doctors or let anyone but family take care of her. Some medical and legal experts expect that we'll see a lot more cases like this, as the elderly are the fastest-growing segment of the U.S. population. We have two guests with us to talk about this case. Maria Laganga is San Francisco Bureau Chief for the L.A. Times, and she joins us from NPR member station KQED. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you.
Also on the line is Dr. Brad Stewart. He's Chief Medical Officer for Sutter Care at Home, a California-based in-home hospice services agency, and an advocate for improved end-of-life care. Welcome, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you.
Maria, let's start with you first. As we mentioned, this case of Stephanie Hernandez went to court. The jury flinched when they saw photos of her great aunt, Concha Lopez. How would you describe this case?
I think it's a dramatic and very sad case of conflicting issues here. We have a young woman who's stepping up to take care of an elderly family member, not quite equipped to the task, and we have the older woman not wanting to be cared for by outsiders. And it's just a difficult issue of what is neglect, what is good enough care, what is murder, which is what Stephanie was charged with. And apparently we're going to see more of these.
And she was charged with other things aside from murder.
Yes, she was charged with elder abuse, both felony and misdemeanor. And the jury struggled for a few days on this.
And they eventually?
They eventually exonerated her, but not before she spent 14 months in jail and lost custody of her daughter.
Dr. Stewart, how unusual is a case like this? And how unusual is a case of elderly abuse in court?
Well, I think this case is really unusual in the degree that this patient progressed, or this person. She didn't want to become a patient, which we're going to see more and more of that as well. She weighed 35 pounds. She's digested much of her own tissue, to put it bluntly. And, you know, the real irony here is that her caregiving was so good that she survived much longer than most other people do. So it's unusual in degree of progression. But we see cases like this, you know, with some frequency in hospice at home, in a country where we can't force people to go in for medical attention. This is happening and is going to happen more in the future, I think.
Well, you know, you say unusual in its progression. So I guess if someone is neglecting an elderly person that they're supposed to be caring for, where do you draw that line and say that, you know, this is a problem, this is neglect or abuse, and it isn't just a natural progression of someone in the process of dying?
The progression to this extent of bed sores and such only occurred because the caregiver was doing what the patient wanted.
I was just going to say that one other point that Dr. Stewart often makes is that this is also a question of patient autonomy, that she had the right to decline care, and with bed sores, she had a right to be in a comfortable position whether or not it was good for her skin. And she had a right not to eat if she wasn't hungry.
During Stephanie Hernandez's trial, though, there were some folks who said that these bed sores, you know, were not part of the normal dying process because of the numerous wounds and the inflammation. Just to play devil's advocate for a minute, is there sort of a difference of opinion as to how severe these types of sores can be before they're considered abuse?
I just don't think it's appropriate to use the word abuse in a case like this, no matter how bad the bed sores get. The caregiver, the niece, was giving the best care she could, and it was care that the patient wanted. So, no, there is not a point where you can call a case abuse just because the bed sores clinically have progressed. When you weigh 35 pounds, you're just going to develop bed sores.
But certainly abuse and neglect of the elderly does exist, and there has to be some sort of protection for the elderly in cases like this as well.
Yes, absolutely. If we had had this case at our place and it had gone this way, we would have involved Adult Protective Services, and it would have been the same outcome, I think.
Let's talk a little bit more, Maria, about Stephanie Hernandez's story. She was the only person caring for her great aunt. She had been a college student. She dropped out to raise her daughter. So she's in her 20s. She's relatively young. She's got a young child living in the house. And actually, some of her relatives then blamed her for her great aunt's death. So there were a lot of things happening there. If in a situation like this where a family is facing a deteriorating elderly loved one and they think that maybe a young, able-bodied person, can help out, how can a young person be sure, A, that they're educated to be able to take on that kind of a responsibility, and B, that they're protected so something like this doesn't happen to them?
And that's a very good question, and I think it's a little bit difficult to answer in that there were, on occasion, times when a nurse came out. The nurse taught, or said she taught, Stephanie how to care for bed sores, and Stephanie tried to do that. One of the questions is that, is there someone like a doctor who could have said maybe she needs hospice care? No one in the family signed her up for this. APS came out once, but then stopped. Visiting nurse who went out and was then barred from entrance discharged her, even though she hadn't seen what the bed sores looked like at that point. So it was a question of Stephanie falling through the cracks and in various times and ways. And if this is what the system is like when there is not a terrible budget out there, one can only imagine what the system's like when there's even less money for this sort of stuff.
What's the best way to avoid this? I guess this question would be for you, Dr. Stewart. I mean, should people maybe draw up a plan? And what are the rules if someone is in an elevated state of dementia and they refuse care? Can someone force them to get care so they don't get blamed like Stephanie Hernandez did?
We run into this a lot where we as care providers, would like to see the person in different circumstances. But the only way to force them into different circumstances is to go to court and try to get conservatorship. The judge will only grant conservatorship if the patient is just so gravely disabled that there's no question that they can't make their own decisions. It can be a drawn-out procedure, and it often the judge will refuse to take away a person's rights and commit them somewhere else that they don't want to go if they're able to say, I don't want to go there. I think there might be ways to provide better care in the home. Medicare doesn't pay for good home continuous management of cases like this. We have a program ourselves called Advanced Illness Management that we've innovated here to take care of people like this, but it's not funded yet. We're working in Washington to try to get this kind of care paid for, and I think in the future that's what we're going to need to do, because our current care systems just aren't designed to handle cases like this.
We're talking about a case in California that recently put the spotlight on elder abuse. 26-year-old Stephanie Hernandez was acquitted of the murder and abuse of her 91-year-old great aunt. When her aunt died, she weighed 35 pounds. Hernandez said her aunt refused to let doctors treat her. We're speaking with Dr. Brad Stewart. He's chief medical officer for the hospice agency Sutter Care at Home. Also with us is Maria Laganga, San Francisco bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times. And Maria, how do we define elder abuse right now?
Well, it's really an interesting question, because there are grave disagreements about what it is. You know, at a state and federal level, there are task forces that go after, abuse in nursing homes. There are task forces that go after elderly financial abuse. But the big question is what happens in the home and when that crosses the line. There are times when people will mug a 70-year-old woman and take her purse, and that person will be charged with elderly abuse when it's robbery. So there are big discussions about what it is, and there are also big discussions about how often it happens, because a lot of times people don't want to admit that they are being abused. A lot of times they don't know where to go to report. So there's a belief that the reporting is incredibly low. And because the numbers are very squishy, and everyone from people who think that Stephanie Hernandez should be in prison for life to the people who think that she should never have been charged agree that without those numbers, you can't. It's hard to advocate for more funding.
Maria, Stephanie Hernandez was in jail for more than a year. She lost custody of her daughter. What ended up happening to her after she was released?
She went back home to the same house where her great aunt died, and had last I talked to her was working to get her daughter back, and that seemed as if it was going to happen. She's looking for a job in a city with 20% unemployment and hoping to put her life back together.
I read that she may be caring for another elderly relative, her grandfather as well?
Yes, her grandfather lives two houses away, and he has Parkinson's and some dementia, and she is pitching in on the care. She's not doing the intensive 24-hour-a-day stuff that she did with her great aunt. She emotionally can't do that yet, but she is going there sort of every day and helping others, giving them breaks and stuff like that. So she's helping care for yet another person, her fifth.
Dr. Stewart, it sounds to me as if that type of family support's very unusual. Would you say that it is?
Yes, I just have to put in a good word for caregivers everywhere. They're the unsung heroes of chronic illness. We have people behind the scenes who are suffering more than the people who are ill in many cases, and we give them very little in the way of support. There's little or no financial assistance available for many of these folks. And depending on the culture, and Latino culture happens to be very good at this in general, the caregiving can be the difference between living and dying.
What advice would you give to those caregivers if they are dealing with this kind of issue and caring for someone at the end of life? What do you tell them?
Well, we do what we can to help support them. There are often resources in the community, other agencies that can be called in to help. If people have the funds, people can hire live-in help or people to come in for shifts during the day. Many of these caregivers, it's a 24-hour-a-day job, and so they can get a break. There are volunteer agencies who can help as well. But it means calling for help. And in cases like this, often families either don't know or just feel that they can handle it themselves.
Hmm.
So I'd say calling for help is a good start.
Do you think that because of this case, people should start thinking about how they might want to legally try to protect themselves?
I don't know. You know, after over three decades of seeing ill people myself, half of that I did in hospitals in my office, the other half at home. I think if a person like this shows up in the emergency room, it's shocking to everyone. People say, how could this possibly happen? If you go out to the home and watch the caregiving in action, despite the bed sores, you often feel very differently. And I think in this case, a great job was being done in caregiving. Unfortunately, the outcome just looks horrible from a clinical point of view.
I just wonder if folks maybe wouldn't be as brave as Stephanie Hernandez second time around and say, you know what, I'm not going to risk going to jail for 14 months if something happens with my grandfather. I don't know. Is there something legally that can be done so the caregiver is protected?
That's a great question, and I don't have a really clear answer for it. I think that if you're going to dedicate your life to caring for a loved one, I think protecting yourself legally is often, you know, way in the back of your mind if it's there at all. I'm not sure there's a way to protect against this other than to advocate for more awareness on the part of the county and state authorities and the prosecutors. I think we need to all pitch in and become more aware of how terrible these cases can look. But we need to pull the blanket up and look underneath and see what's really going on in the home to know the truth.
Hmm. Maria, do you think this case was precedent-setting in any way?
The expert witness for the defense in this case, he's been in the last year or two, he's been involved in eight cases in three or four different states, so he is seeing more of this. I think it is kind of a wake-up call. I know that, you know, I hate to say this, Stephanie's attorney said that for him, the takeaway is never care for someone, but that isn't really an answer. I don't know how well things like advanced directives work, because if a person before they become demented can write down what they do and don't want clearly, that may be one level of care, but I just don't know if it's enough.
Maria Laganga is San Francisco Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, and Dr. Brad Stewart is Chief Medical Officer for Sutter Care at Home. I'd like to thank both of you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.